This is live coverage from ABC News. The death of Muhammad Ali, remembering the greatest.
This is the legend of Muhammad Ali, the most popular fighter there ever will be. He talks a great deal and brags indeed of a powerful punch and blinding speed. Ali fights great. He's got speed and endurance. If you sign to fight him, increase your insurance.
It will be a thriller and a chiller and a killer when I get the griller in Manila.
Yes, the crowd did not dream when they laid down their money that they would see a total eclipse of the sun.
The man to beat me haven't been born yet.
I'm always confident I whip all of them.
Am I really the greatest of all time? Am I really the greatest of all time?
I'm the greatest.
I'm the world's greatest.
From ABC News headquarters, here is correspondent Aaron Katursky.
We're gathering on the air this afternoon to bid farewell to Muhammad Ali, three-time heavyweight boxing champion, a figure the New York Times called the most charismatic and controversial sports figure of the 20th century. Ali died a week ago at age 74 in Phoenix and was buried earlier today after a private ceremony and a very public procession through his hometown of Louisville, and now a public memorial service at the basketball arena in downtown Louisville, where the Ali family has just entered, members of the public and the invited guests on their feet. ABC's Ryan Burrow is there for us and with us live. Ryan.
Yes, good afternoon, Aaron. One of the things that strikes me when you look at the crowd, how incredibly diverse it is. These tickets were free, distributed, first come, first serve. You see men in suits, you see men in T-shirts, women dressed up, women dressed down, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, European, nearly all religions in attendance. And from all indications, this is exactly what Muhammad Ali wanted, joining all races and religions, rich and poor, old and young. I spoke with a man from Turkey who came to Louisville right after hearing about Muhammad Ali's death. He managed to get tickets. I've talked to a couple from Detroit who actually have to stay in Cincinnati because all the hotel rooms are booked right now. They were given tickets by a police officer who heard they had come down just for this. 15,500 tickets distributed, all gone in about an hour Wednesday morning, and those people have now filed into the arena, Aaron.
Earlier today, Ryan, more than 100,000 people turned out for Muhammad Ali's funeral procession in his hometown, and the crowd was throwing flowers on the hearse.
Yeah, pretty incredible scene. So when they left the funeral home, they kind of took a path around the city of Louisville, hitting many stops, going past the Muhammad Ali Center, a museum dedicated in his honor. They went past his boyhood home where he grew up in Louisville, and then went down Muhammad Ali Boulevard, the street named after the boxing legend while he was still alive at that. And then it continued on to the cemetery. I think things took a little bit longer than they expected on that procession as people walked up to the hearse and actually started throwing flowers at it, touched it. It was a very, very impressive scene as people lined the streets chanting Ali, Ali. Many of them know him not only for his boxing career, but also for the things he's done in this community.
Most things have been chronicled in Muhammad Ali, A Tribute to the Greatest by Thomas Hauser, and we're privileged to have Thomas with us today. As you watch this gathering, an incredible gathering, as Ryan notes, of dignitaries, sports figures, all walks of life want to pay tribute to him.
It's extraordinary, but the greatest tribute to Muhammad isn't the superstar athletes and the elite people who are paying tribute and marking his passing. It's the literally hundreds of millions of people around the world who feel a loss. I also have to say that watching pictures of this on the screen, if Muhammad were there, I could imagine him immediately going over and hugging the little children who are there. He had an affinity for 4 and 5 years old, and it really would have brought a smile to his face to see the children there celebrating his legacy.
This is exactly, as Ryan noted, what Muhammad Ali wanted. He and Lonnie had planned the end over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I don't know how much Muhammad got into the nitty-gritty of this, but certainly Muhammad wanted his life to symbolize tolerance and understanding of all people. And the way the aftermath of his death has just wafted around the world is in keeping with that, because there are no barriers of race, religion, creed. It's just universal. And when we talk about Muhammad being the greatest, most charismatic sports figure of the 20th century, there really wasn't much before the 20th century. So we're really talking of all time.
Muhammad Ali's memorial service to get underway in Louisville, led by Imam Zayed Shaker. But there are going to be three notable eulogies delivered by former President Clinton, by Bryant Gumbel, the sportscaster, and by Billy Crystal, whose memorable 15 rounds that he first delivered, I think in 1980, was just an extraordinary tribute not only to his own abilities, but to the richness of Muhammad Ali's character.
Well, Muhammad, like Billy Crystal also did a mean Howard Cosell imitation, and Muhammad always enjoyed that. You know, this morning I was thinking back to a moment years and years ago when Muhammad was with Howard Cosell, and he was picking away at Howard Cosell's toupee, lifting the hair up, putting it down, and I said to myself, what would Muhammad have done with Donald Trump's hair?
Donald Trump not at the funeral. Neither is President Obama, whose daughter graduated from high school today. But the administration is going to be represented by Valerie Jarrett. And former President Bill Clinton, you heard the applause a second ago, has just entered the KFC Yum Center in downtown Louisville, where this memorial service is taking place. Some 15,000 people were given free admission, in addition to the dignitaries that are gathered on the dais and in the front rows, along with members of the Ali family. And they have endured some fairly public moments of memory over the last week or so.
All praises due to God, the Lord of all the worlds. And now, please be seated. Ladies and gentlemen,
as the ceremony is about to get underway, Tom, the family is certainly very public mourning, but I imagine those private moments of memory have to be quite sacred to them.
Well, Muhammad belonged to the world. They always understood that. They always respected that. And they've been an important part of the universal mourning this past week.
Hamza Abdul Malik is a young imam of the Midtown Mosque in Memphis, Tennessee, where he's spearheading a neighborhood renewal effort in one of the most blighted neighborhoods in Memphis. And that effort is centered around the mosque, one of the few African-American graduates of Al-Azhar University. He will share with us a few verses from the Quran.
Verses from the Quran begin this memorial service for Muhammad Ali.
Ladies and gentlemen, Hamza Abdul Malik.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم إن الذين قالوا ربنا الله ثم استقاموا تتنزل عليهم الملائكة ألا تخافوا ألا تخافوا ولا تحزنوا وأبشروا بالجنة وأبشروا بالجنة التي كنتم توعدون نحن أولياؤكم في الحياة الدنيا وفي الآخرة ولكم فيها ما تشتهي أنفسكم ولكم فيها ما تدعون نزلا من غفور رحيم ومن أحسن قولا وعمل صالحا وقال إنني من المسلمين ولا تستوي الحسنة ولا السيئة ادفع بالتي هي أحسن فإذا الذي بينك وبينه عداوة كأنه ولي حميم وما يلقاها إلا الذين صبروا وما يلقاها إلا ذو حظ عظيم صدق الله العظيم والحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم
And now with the with the translation of those verses, we would like to bring to the stage Aya Kutma. Aya Kutma is a second generation daughter of Syrian immigrants. She's an excellent student. In her spare time in recent years...
This is the memorial service for Muhammad Ali. Quranic verses were just chanted, followed by an English translation and then... assorted speeches and eulogies still to come from Bryant Gumbel, from Billy Crystal, and from former President Bill Clinton. Outside, a growing memorial in memory of Muhammad Ali, who was buried in a private ceremony. But this memorial is a very public way for his hometown to say goodbye. The translations of,
ladies and gentlemen, Aya Kutma.
The Quranic verses we just heard chanted now.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful. Truly those who say, our Lord is God, and are upright, the angels will descend upon them saying, have neither fear nor sadness, but rather rejoice in this paradise that you have been promised. We are your allies in this lower life and the hereafter. Where you will have your heart's desire, and you'll have whatever you ask for, hospitably from the one most forgiving, most merciful. Who is more beautiful in speech than the one who invites to God and does righteous works, saying, truly I am submitted to God. For good and evil are not equal. Repel ugliness with beauty, and behold, the one between you in whom there was enmity is transformed into a warm friend. But no one arrives at the station without great patience and immense fortune. Surah Fussilat, Prostration, chapter 41, verses 30 to 35. Thank you.
Aya Kutma, translating the verses of Quran chanted at the outset of this memorial service for Muhammad Ali, the boxing champ who revolutionized the sport and then transcended the ring. And we're joined today by Thomas Hauser, the author of, among other things, Muhammad Ali, A Tribute to the Greatest. Stirring to hear the Quran chanted at any time, but certainly fitting for this occasion.
Well, one of the things that went through my mind as I was listening to the English translation is the similarities between Islam, Christianity, Judaism, and the other great religions of the world, not on every point, but certainly at the heart of it. So many of the things that were read could have been read in a ceremony from any other faith and had the same meaning to the people gathered there.
Muhammad Ali's faith, when he ultimately chose it, was certainly not always a point of pride for many people, and it took a long time for the country to finally embrace it.
Well, it was a point of pride for Muhammad, and yet he was all embracing. He said many times that he felt if you were a good Christian, if you were a good Jew, it doesn't matter what religion you are, if you're a good person, you'd receive God's blessing.
Louisville, Kentucky, admirably led by Mayor Greg Fisher, I would like to welcome you. I give it up for the mayor.
This is Imam Zayed Shaker presiding over this memorial service for Muhammad Ali.
I would like to welcome you to this memorial service for the people's champ, Muhammad Ali. At this time, we would like to introduce our first speaker, Dr. Reverend Kevin W. Cosby. If were it not for time, since Cosby rhymes with Ali, we would say Cosby, Cosby, but time doesn't permit. Reverend Cosby has served as senior pastor of St. Stephen Church in Louisville, Kentucky, due greatly to his practical and dynamic Bible teachings. His congregation has grown exponentially over the long years of his ministry. Reverend Cosby combines passion, wit, and intellect as the foundation of an inspirational ministry that has transformed the lives of thousands of individuals. Reverend Cosby.
Thank you.
The Reverend Dr. Kevin Cosby, the first speaker.
I looked in the dictionary for the word fidelity, and it had two words, Lonnie Ali. In 1967, 9 months prior to his assassination and martyrdom, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was interviewed by Merv Griffin on the Merv Griffin Show. Merv Griffin asked Dr. King a relevant question. He said, Dr. King, what has been the greatest effect and impact that the civil rights struggle has had on the Negro? Dr. King paused and said, besides the dismantling of barriers that prohibited the Negro from free access, the greatest and the most profound effect that the civil rights struggle had was that it infused in the Negro something that the Negro needed all along. And that was a sense of somebody-ness. You will never be able to appreciate what Dr. King meant when he said the Negro needed a sense of somebody-ness until you understand the 350 years of nobodiness that was infused into the psyche of people of color. Every sacred document in our history, every hallowed institution conspired to convince the African in America, that when God made the African, that God was guilty of creative malfeasance. All of our sacrosanct documents from the Constitution said to the Negro that you're nobody. The Constitution said that we were three-fifths of a person. Decisions by the Supreme Court, like the Dred Scott decision, said to the Negro, to the African, that you had no rights that whites were bound to respect. And even Francis Scott Key, in his writing of the Star Spangled Banner, we sang verse 1, but in verse 3, he celebrates slavery by saying, no refuge can save the hireling and slave from the sorrow of night or the death of the grave. Every institution, from religion to entertainment, from Amos and Andy to Jane and Tarzan, infused in the psyche of the Negro that he was inferior. But something happened to the Depression generation and the World War II generation of African Americans. Jackie Robinson picked up his bat and hit a ball, and the Brooklyn Dodgers win the pennant. Joe Louis dismantles the pride of Aryan supremacy by knocking out Max Smelling in 124 seconds. Jesse Lewis runs in ambulatory speed and wins 4 gold medals. Rosa Parks sits down on a bus in Montgomery in December of 1955, and a young seminary student from Boston University stands up and takes the complex ideas of Niebuhr and Tillich and dips it in chocolate so Big Mama can understand it. And then from Louisville, emerged a silver-tongued poet who took the ethos of somebody-ness to unheard-of heights. Before James Brown said, I'm black and I'm proud, Muhammad Ali said, I'm black and I'm pretty. Black and pretty was an oxymoron. Blacks did not say pretty. The first black millionaire in this country was not Oprah, but it was Madam C.J. Walker, who made products in order to help black people escape their Africanity. But Muhammad Ali said, I'm proud, I'm pretty, I'm glad of who I am. And when he said that, that infused in Africans a sense of somebody-ness. To extrapolate Muhammad Ali from the times in which he lives is what's called historic presentism. It is to talk about George Washington and not talk about the American Revolution. It's to talk about Abraham Lincoln and not talk about the Civil War. It's to talk about Franklin Delano Roosevelt and not talk about the Depression and World War II. Our brother Muhammad Ali was a product of a difficult time, and he dared to love black people at a time when black people had a problem loving themselves. He dared to affirm the beauty of blackness. He dared to affirm the power and the capacity of African Americans. He dared to love America's most unloved race. And he loved us all. And we loved him because we knew he loved us. He loved us all. Whether you lived in the suburbs or whether you lived in the slums, whether you lived on the avenue or whether you lived in an alley, whether you came from the penthouse or whether you lived in the projects, whether you came from Morehouse or whether you had no house, whether you were high yellow or boot black, Muhammad Ali loved you. Our city is known for two things. It is known for Muhammad Ali. It is known for the Kentucky Derby. We hope you will come back and visit our city the first Saturday in May. We hope you will place a bet on one of the horses. But if you do, please know the rules. What will happen is the horses will start off in the starting gate, and then the signal will be given. They will run in the mud for 2 minutes, and the winner will then be led to the winner's circle, where a wreath of roses will be placed around the horse's neck. We want you to make a bet, but please know the rules. You cannot bet for the horse once it's in the winner's circle. You have to bet for the horse while it's still in the mud. And there are a lot of people. There are a lot of people who will bet and have bet on Muhammad Ali when he was in the winner's circle. But the masses bet on him while he was still in the mud. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar stood with him when he was in the mud. Jim Brown stood with him when he was in the mud. Bill Russell stood with him when he was in the mud. Howard Cosell stood with him when he was in the mud. Now, please don't mishear me. I am not saying that Muhammad Ali is the property of black people. He is the property of all people. But while he is the property of all people, let us never forget that he is the product of black people in their struggle to be free. I went looking for Jesus on a poor West End street, thinking that I would find him as he walked around with men and women with stumbling feet. People who had their heads bowed low because they were broke and had nowhere to go. But then I went looking for Jesus way in the sky, thinking he would wear a robe that would dazzle my eye. When suddenly Jesus came walking by with stumbling feet, because he'd been hanging with the poor on a West End street. The Muhammad Ali of my childhood had a shuffle, but as he grew older, he walked with shuffling feet. And I would submit to you that he walked with shuffling feet not because of Parkinson's disease, but he walked with shuffling feet because he hung out with the folk in West Louisville who had shuffling feet. Peace and God bless you.
Reverend Dr. Kevin Cosby putting Muhammad Ali into context at his memorial service in Louisville. I'm Aaron Katursky. You're listening to live coverage from ABC News. And we're joined by the author of Muhammad Ali, A Tribute to the Greatest, Thomas Hauser. Extraordinary first speech.
I thought it was a remarkable speech. The one thing somebody might take issue with, given the historical context, is to refer to Muhammad Ali as the property of all people. But certainly he is
don't
inside
give
of us all.
Don't give a teenager a telephone and don't give a preacher a microphone. We'd like to bring Senator Orrin Hatch to the stage, now in his seventh term as Utah's senator, one of Utah's senators. He is the most senior Republican in the Senate, author of some of the most far-reaching legislation in recent decades. Senator Hatch is a seasoned and distinguished public servant. We are deeply honored by his presence today.
Senator Orrin Hatch steps to the podium on a stage with white flowers.
Wow, Reverend, that was really good. It's hard for this poor old senator to have to follow that, is all I can say. Well, ahead of the first fight with Sonny Liston, Muhammad Ali stood before a crowded pack of reporters and told the world unapologetically who he was. I'm the greatest. That's what he said. With this simple proclamation, Al took the pen of history and wrote his own, Ali took the pen of history and wrote his own title in the textbooks. He was not Muhammad Ali, the prize fighter, or even Muhammad Al, the world champion. He was Muhammad Al, the greatest. Ali's doubters dismissed this declaration as mere braggadocio. But Ali wasn't talking trash. He was speaking truth. And he was, in the world of boxing, he truly was the greatest. With the cutthroat quickness of a street fighter and the simple grace of a ballerina, Ali moved with Achilles-like agility and punched with Herculean strength. But to assume that Ali's greatness stems solely from his athletic prowess is to see only half the man. Ali was great, not only as an extraordinary fighter, he was a committed civil rights leader, an international diplomat, a forceful advocate of religious freedom, an effective emissary of Islam. He was something. He was caring as a father, a husband, a brother, and a friend. Indeed, it is as a personal friend that I witnessed Ali's greatness for myself. I first met Muhammad Ali 28 years ago, almost to the day, to this day. I was in my Senate office, an assistant called in and said, "You have a visitor outside." And I was really surprised that it was none other than the champion himself. The friendship we developed, I think, was puzzling to many people, especially to those who saw only our differences. I might say that but where others saw difference, Ali and I saw kinship. We were both dedicated to our families and deeply devoted to our faiths. He took Islam, and I to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We were both products of humble backgrounds and hardscrabble youth. Ali grew up poor here in Louisville, and I grew up poor in Pittsburgh. True, we were different in some ways, but our differences fortified our friendship. They did not define it. I saw greatness in Ali's ability to look beyond the horizon and our differences to find common ground. This shared sensibility was the foundation of a rich and meaningful relationship that I will forever treasure. One of my fondest memories of our friendship was when Ali joined me in the Salt Lake to go and listen to the Salt Lake Mormon Tabernacle Choir. I have to say, it was the famed Mormon Tabernacle Choir. And Ali, you know, loved music, and he enjoyed the choir's performance. But he seemed most excited to share his own religious beliefs with those who came to hear the Christian hymns. Ali attracted big crowds that day, and as he always did, and eagerly gave everyone autographed pamphlets explaining his Muslim beliefs. Hundreds of Mormons lined up to grab Ali's pamphlets, and of course, I took one for myself. I respected his deeply held convictions just as he respected mine. In our relationship, it was anchored by our different faiths. Ollie was open to goodness in all of its diverse realities and varieties. On another occasion, I took Ollie to Primary Children's Hospital in Salt Lake City. We visited with downtrodden children who perhaps had never smiled a day in their lifetime until Ollie showed up. Ollie held those kids and looked into their eyes. They would grin from ear to ear. These are kids that never smiled. They were so pained. The nurses were astounded. Never before had they seen someone who had connected so immediately and profoundly with these sick children. Ollie had a special way with kids, as we all know. He may have been a tough and tenacious man in the ring, but he was compassionate and tender around those that he loved. For all of his ferocity as a fighter, Ollie was also a peacemaker. A particular radio host in Utah berated me constantly on the airwaves, week after week. And one day the host asked if I would arrange for Ollie to meet Utah's former middleweight champion, Gene Fulmer, for a joint interview. Ollie agreed, knowing the appearance could help me build some goodwill. But he also was very interested in meeting Gene as well. It was an unforgettable experience. Here were two champions, face to face, reminiscing about some of the best fights the world has ever seen. And I have to say, and in the process, Ollie claimed that radio host, well, he charmed the radio host so much on my behalf, gently transforming an unrepentant antagonist into a respectful sparring partner. So dedicated was Ollie to our friendship that he joined me on the campaign trail during several election cycles. He came to Utah year after year to raise funds for a charity benefiting needy women, women in jeopardy, and families in our state. Ollie didn't look at life through the binary lens of Republican Democrat, so common today. He saw worthy causes and shared humanity. In Ollie's willingness to put principles ahead of partisanship, he showed us all the path to greatness. And I'll never forget that greatness, nor will I ever forget him. There were many faces to Ollie's greatness. His abilities as a boxer, his charisma as a public figure, his benevolence as a father and as a friend, all of these made Ollie great. But it was something else that made him the greatest. Ollie was the greatest because, as a debilitated yet unbroken champion in his later years, he pointed us to a greatness beyond ourselves. A greatness beyond even Ollie. He pointed us to the greatness of God. God raised up Ollie to be the greatest fighter in the world of all time. Yet he allowed Ollie to wrestle with Parkinson's disease, an inescapable reminder that we are all mortal, and that we are all dependent on God's grace. Ollie believed this himself. He once told me, God gave me this condition to remind me always that I am human, then, and that only He is the greatest. Ollie was an unsurpassed symbol of our universal dependence on the divine. He was the greatest because he reminded us all who truly is the greatest, God, our Creator. I'm eternally grateful for my special bond with this special man and for my friendship with his beloved wife, Lonnie, who I love dearly. She's one of the great women in this world. She was dedicated to her companion to the very end, and boy, I know it. I pray that all may rest peacefully, and that Ollie will rest peacefully in the presence of the greatest of all, even our God. I can bear testimony that I believe in God. I believe that we're here on earth for a reason. I believe that this earth life is a time for us to do what's right for God and for our fellow men and women. And I don't know that I've ever met anybody who did it any better than my friend, Muhammad Ali. God bless you. God bless the family.
Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah had a public memorial service for Muhammad Ali, a big send-off at his hometown of Louisville that began earlier this morning with a procession, 19 miles in all, carrying Ali's casket past his childhood home to a private ceremony at his final resting place. And now this very public memorial, 15 to 20,000 people packed inside the Louisville basketball arena. I'm Aaron Katursky. You're listening to live coverage from ABC News. Thomas Hauser wrote Muhammad Ali a tribute to the greatest, among other things, and he's with us now as we hear so much about Muhammad Ali, a bit about him in the ring, more about him and his faith. And those two things were inseparable.
Well, we're not here today with hundreds of millions of people around the world because of what Ali did in the ring. That was the platform for what came afterwards.
Let us pray. Loving eternal God, as we gather today in prayer, we do so with an abiding sense of gratitude. Our gratitude knows no bounds as we thank you for the gift of this good and gentle man. Muhammad Ali opened our eyes to the evil of racism, to the absurdity of war. He showed us with incredible patience that a debilitating illness need never diminish joy and love in our lives. He chided our consciences. He awakened in us a deeper sense of the need to respect one another, to set aside racial differences. The legendary fighter of all time, in reality, taught us to heal rather than to fight, to embrace rather than to turn away, to include rather than exclude. While proclaiming himself to be the greatest, he showed us that his greatness lies in his love and concern for others, most particularly the marginalized, the suffering, the helpless, the hopeless. Your gift of him has enriched us, has made us better people, has created a more gentle world. We dare not return him to you today without expressing our gratitude for the gift of him. Amen.
Monsignor Henry Kriegel, one of many leaders of varying faith traditions brought together for this memorial service for Muhammad Ali, very much the way Muhammad Ali wanted it. This is all because of what he and Lonnie planned in the years before his death. They're inside a basketball arena in Louisville with 15,000 people and a stage dressed in white flowers, an American flag, and the Olympic rings hang overhead.
True public
Imam Zayed Shakir is,
Dr. Giannotti is the
officiating this memorial service, but it is shared by all faith traditions, by any number of dignitaries who will shortly be giving eulogies along with members of the Ali family. And we've heard so far about his faith, his commitment to civil rights, and it just points Thomas Hauser, I'm just struck by the varied nature of this man. As you say, boxing was the excuse.
He was multifaceted. I noticed that there are two rabbis who will be speaking today, and it brings back a memory of the time when I went to a mosque with Muhammad to share that part of his life with him. And as we went in, he said to me, "Now, when we say our Islamic prayers, you say your Jewish prayers. Only don't say them out loud because it might make somebody mad."
Dr. Timothy Gianti, stepping to the podium now in Louisville.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, who is the loving nurturer of the creation and the ever compassionate and ever merciful, I'd like to share a prayer today. And this is a prayer adapted from a traditional prayer of the Prophet Muhammad, alayhi salatu wassalam. May God's peace and blessings be upon him. But before I do so, I would just like to say to the family, to Lonnie, to everyone here, that serving Muhammad Ali has been one of the greatest privileges of my life. O God, you who are the light of the heavens and the earth, grant our brother Muhammad a light in his heart, a light in his earthly body now restored to the earth, a light in his grave, a light before him as he journeys on to you, a light in all that he has left behind in this world, a light to his right and a light to his left. O God, increase him in light. Grant him light. A light in his deeds in this world and a light in the hereafter. A light in the hearts of those whom he loved and a light in the eyes of those who loved him. A light in those whom he knocked down, and a light in those whom he lifted up. A light in his words which echo in our hearts. A light in the lives of all those whom he touched. A light in his children, and a light in their mothers, a light in his grandchildren, and a light in his devoted wife, Lani. O Lord, increase your servant in light and give him light. Embrace him in light and fill us all with light. Ya Nuru Samawati wal Ard, O you who are the light of the heavens and the earth. Ya Arham Ar-Rahimeen, O you who are the most merciful of all those who show mercy. Ya Allah, Ya Hu.
Timothy Giannotti is an Islamic studies scholar.
Next, we will hear a few words from Rabbi Michael Lerner. Rabbi Lerner is not only the rabbi of Beit Tikkun, but also the editor of Tikkun magazine. As the magazine's name suggests, Rabbi Lerner has dedicated his life to working to heal and repair the world. Rabbi Lerner is never afraid of ruffling a few feathers, so we ask him to be nice today. Rabbi Lerner.
We'll see about those feathers. El Malei Rachamim Shochen Bamerahomim. Master of Compassion, God of Compassion, send your blessings to Muhammad Ali and send your blessings to all who mourn for him, and send your blessings for all the millions and millions of people who mourn for him all over this planet. Amen. I come here speaking as a representative of American Jews, and to say that American Jews played an important role of solidarity with the African-American struggles in this country, and that we today stand in solidarity with the Islamic community in this country and all around the world. We will not tolerate politicians or anyone else putting down Muslims and blaming Muslims for a few people. We know what it's like to be demeaned. We know what it's like to have a few people who act against the highest visions of our tradition to then be identified as the value of the entire tradition. And one of the reasons that we in Tikkun magazine, a magazine of liberal and progressive Jews, but also an interfaith magazine, have called upon the United States to stand up to the part of the Israeli government that is oppressing Palestinians is that we as Jews understand that our commitment is to recognize that God has created everyone in God's image, and that everyone is equally precious, and that means the Palestinian people as well as all other people on the planet. I know the people of Louisville have a special relationship to Muhammad Ali, and I had a personal relationship in the 60s when both of us were indicted by the federal government for our various stands against the war in Vietnam. I want to say that although he was cheered on as the heavyweight champion of the world, you know, the truth is that in all the honor to him, but heavyweight champions of the world come and go, and sports heroes come and go. There was something about Muhammad Ali that was different. At the key moment when he had that recognition, he used it to stand up to an immoral war and say, "No, I won't go." And it's for that reason that tens of millions of Americans who don't particularly care about boxing do care about Muhammad Ali, because he was a person who was willing to risk a great honor that he got and a great fame that he got to stand up for the beliefs that he had, to speak truth to power when the rest of the people around him said, "No, no, you're going to lose your championship." And it was taken away from him for 5 years. But he stood up and was willing to take that kind of a risk because of that kind of moral integrity. So I want to say, how do we honor Muhammad Ali? And the answer is, the way to honor Muhammad Ali is to be Muhammad Ali today. And that means us, everyone here and everyone listening. It's up to us to continue that ability to speak truth to power. We must speak out, refuse to follow the path of conformity to the rules of the game in life. We must refuse to follow the path of conformity. Tell the 1% who own 80% of the wealth of this country that it's time to share that wealth. Tell the politicians who use violence worldwide and then preach into nonviolence to the oppressed that it's time for them to end their drone warfare and every other form of warfare, to close our bases around the world, to bring the troops home. Tell those who created mass incarceration that it's time to create a guaranteed income for everyone in our society. Tell judges to let out of prison the many African Americans swept up by racist police and imprisoned by racist judges. many of them in prison today for offenses like possessing marijuana that white people get away with all the time. Tell our elected officials to imprison those who authorized torture and those who ran the big banks and investment companies that caused the economic collapse of 2008. Tell the leaders of Turkey to stop killing the Kurds. Tell Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu that the way to get security is for Israel is to stop the occupation of the West Bank and help create a Palestinian state. Tell the next president of the United States that she Tell the next president of the United States that she should seek a constitutional amendment to make all national and state elections funded by Congress and the state legislatures and all other sources of money be banned, including money from corporations, from individuals, all other money, make it all public funding. Tell her that the way to achieve homeland security is not for us to try new ways of domination. The strategy of domination of the world of the other to get security has been tried for the last 10,000 years and it doesn't work. The way to get security is for the United States to become known as the most generous and caring country in the world, not the most powerful. And we can start with a global and domestic Marshall Plan to once and for all end global and domestic poverty, homelessness, hunger, inadequate education, inadequate health care. So I want to, as chair of the Interfaith Network of Spiritual Progressives, by the way, spiritualprogressives.org, come and join us, spiritualprogressives.org. I want to affirm our commitment to the well-being of all Muslims on this planet, as well as the people of all faiths and secular humanists as well. We wish to pay honor to Muslims of the world as they continue today the fast of Ramadan and join with them in mourning the loss and celebrating the life of Muhammad Ali, a great fighter for justice and peace. Peace be upon him. Peace be upon the Prophet Muhammad. Peace be upon all of humanity and peace on all of us. Amen.
Rabbi Michael Lerner from Tikkun Magazine at the public memorial for Muhammad Ali, urging people to take up the spirit of some of what Muhammad Ali might have fought for in this day and age. Thomas Hauser is with us, the author of Muhammad Ali, A Tribute to the Greatest.
Obviously, that went beyond what a lot of people would think is appropriate for this occasion, but it did remind me of an event about 20 years ago. There's an organization called Givat Haviva in Israel, which brings Arabs and Jews together, especially children. They had a dinner in New York when Muhammad was honored. There were eight Jewish children, eight Islamic children there. We could mingle and talk with them. The only thing we couldn't ask them is what religion they were. We could discuss anything else, and we really couldn't tell who was who. There's a message in that.
This public memorial for Muhammad Ali continues in Louisville. I'm Aaron Katursky. You're listening to live coverage from ABC News. Outside the venue is ABC's Ryan Burrow. There's a growing memorial to Muhammad Ali where people have dropped flowers and they threw more of them on his casket as it processed 19 miles through his hometown. Ryan?
Yeah, good afternoon. And it's been a growing memorial really since Saturday morning. The news obviously came Friday of the passing of Muhammad Ali, and people began coming out to the Muhammad Ali Center, which is actually not too far away from the basketball arena where the memorial is taking place, just a couple blocks away. It's a center that focuses on his boxing career as well as some of the humanitarian efforts through the years. It shows images of him lighting the torch match in 1996, that very memorable moment for the Olympics, with him shaking from the Parkinson's and still managing to be strong and to light the cauldron. People have been paying their respects by touring the museum, talking back and forth with each other, dropping off flowers, photographs, something that we saw kind of similar to what we saw up in Minnesota with Prince, except I think people maybe were a little bit more expecting of this death and had been preparing, at least in their hearts, for a day like today. But that hasn't slowed down the support and love that's been given out to Muhammad Ali over this last week by people not only from Louisville, people regionally, and people from across the world. We've talked to people from Turkey. I've been told that there's Muhammad Ali fan clubs in Germany as well as England. So he definitely has a global reach that's showing here in these days here in Louisville.
ABC's Ryan Burrow outside the Muhammad Ali Center inside the basketball arena here in Louisville. The public memorial service continues. Members of a Native American tribe are on the dais at the moment. An interfaith ceremony, really a showcase, Tom, for the world's religions and a view that Muhammad Ali espoused, that as long as you work for peace, you're all right with me.
Well, this would have made Muhammad happy, and he really reached deep into the psyche of us all, particularly the American people. You know, I have to think that one of the things that allowed the United States to elect an African-American president with the strange-sounding name Barack Obama in 2008 was that we had learned to embrace and love a man with a strange-sounding name, Muhammad Ali.
It didn't come easy, though, for Muhammad Ali. And we were reminded about how vilified he was for a good period of his younger life.
Well, first, nothing comes easy in boxing. That's for starters. It might be the hardest, most brutal trade in the world. And as we know, Ali was forced into exile when he refused induction into the United States Army. He had to give up the heavyweight championship of the world for 3.5 years. But what he said to me many times was, look, there are young men who believe the war on Vietnam was right. They enlisted in the United States Armed Forces. They were sent to Vietnam. They were killed. And those young men and their families made a much greater sacrifice than I did.
Thomas Hauser wrote Muhammad Ali, a tribute to the greatest. Tribute continues in Louisville with members of a Native American tribe on stage now.
These were the words. And to the family, the relatives, and friends of Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali was a leader among men and a champion of the people. He fought for the people of color. Yet he was a man of peace and principle, a man of compassion, who used his great gifts for the common good. His spirit has a clear path to the Creator. Tadadaho, Sidney Hill, a spiritual leader of the Haudenosaunee, Six Nation Iroquois Confederation, Onondaga Nation, and myself, Joy Quisson, Faith Keeper, Turtle Clan, Onondaga Council of Chiefs, have journeyed here today to add our voice to this congregation of world leaders in honor of his work and for the rights and dignity of people of color and the common man. He was always in support of the indigenous peoples of this hemisphere in our quest for our inherent land rights, self-determination, identity, and collective rights that include the natural world. We know what he was up against. Because we've had 524 years of survival training ourselves. In 1978, a congressman from the state of Washington put a bill into Congress to terminate our treaties with the United States. And Indian nations walked from California to Washington, D.C. in protest. Muhammad Ali marched into Washington, D.C. with us. He was a free, independent spirit. He stood his ground with great courage and conviction, and he paid a price. And this country did too. And we all did. Values and principles will determine one's destiny. And the principles of a nation will do the same. Poor people do not have many options. And you fighters know what I'm talking about. He said that the ring was Ali's path to his destiny. He said he'd be heavyweight champion of the world, and he was, 3 times. And this 4th time, right here, right now. On his journey in life, he lived and learned the hard way. He brought a light into this world, my world, our world, and that light will shine a long, long time. Peace, brother. Peace. And on behalf of Tadadaho, the Haudenosaunee, my friend Ernie, and the indigenous people everywhere, peace. Thank you. Nawaha.
Representing Native American tribes, Chief Sidney Hill, Chief Orrin Lyons, at the public memorial for Muhammad Ali.
I've been thinking back to what Rabbi Lerner said a few minutes ago. Ali didn't like things tied up in nicely wrapped gift packages. At his best in the 1960s, and most important, he challenged and prodded and provoked. So I have the feeling that Muhammad Ali, sitting there listening to Rabbi Lerner, would have said, "Oh, man."
Thomas Hauser, the author of Muhammad Ali, A Tribute to the Greatest, is with us for his memorial service in Louisville, Kentucky. 15,000-20,000 people are packed into the basketball arena, the KFC Yum Center in downtown Louisville. There's a growing tribute to Muhammad Ali in flowers and notes outside. And earlier today, there was a 19-mile procession that drove his casket all through his hometown, past some of his favorite spots, past the Muhammad Ali Center, where a lot of the values being expressed today and attributed to him are taught and carried on. Later, we'll hear from former President Clinton, from Billy Crystal, from Brian Gumbel, from his wife Lonnie, and from other members of the Ali family to give more personal tributes. But so far, we have heard from different faith traditions. Muhammad Ali wanted it this way. He wanted all of these traditions represented, and now Rabbi Joe Rapport is stepping to the podium.
This is a reading from our memorial prayers on Yom Kippur, our Day of Atonement, our most sacred day of the year. It was written many decades ago by Rabbi Alvin Fine, a civil rights and humanitarian leader who could never have known when he composed these words that he was writing a eulogy from Muhammad Ali.
Birth is a beginning, and death a destination, and life is a journey, from childhood to maturity, and youth to age, from innocence to awareness, and ignorance to knowing, from foolishness to discretion, and then perhaps to wisdom, from weakness to strength, and strength to weakness, and often back again, from health to sickness, and back we pray to health again, from offense to forgiveness, from loneliness to love, from joy to gratitude, and pain to compassion, from grief to understanding, from fear to faith, from defeat to defeat to defeat, until looking backward or ahead, we see that victory lies not at some high place along the way, but in having made the journey, stage by stage, a sacred pilgrimage. Birth is a beginning, and death a destination, and life is a journey, a sacred pilgrimage to life everlasting. We say words of prayer, and they remain words, until we encounter a person who embodies these words and makes them real. I've said these words many times before, at funerals and in memorial services, but never have I felt them come to life and speak of a single shining soul as I do today. Muhammad Ali was the heart of this city, the living, breathing embodiment of the greatest that we can be. He was our heart, and that heart beats here still. Let me tell you a story you already know. It's one of those stories about Ali being gracious to a stranger that so many of us have told so many times and in so many ways that we sometimes forget the lessons that these stories were intended to teach us. It's a story Hannah tells about her father towards the end of their book, The Soul of a Butterfly. Hannah's driving her father to a bookstore on one Sunday to pick up some Bibles and Qurans for a project that he's working on. They pass an elderly man standing by the road with a Bible in one hand and his thumb in the air with the other. They offer him a ride. And he thanks them, saying that he's on his way home from church. He only needs to go a few miles down the street where he can pick up a cab. Hannah asks where he lives. He doesn't want to trouble them or go out of their way. He has no idea who's sitting in the front seat of this car. Until Muhammad Ali turns around and says, "It's no trouble at all. We're just on our way to a bookstore to buy some Bibles and Qurans." Once the man gets over meeting the greatest of all time, he insists that he has three Bibles in his house, and he'd be pleased to give them to Ali in appreciation for the ride. Ali thanks him, but says he wants to pay for the Bibles. The man says, "No, the Bibles were meant as a gift." Ali asks him what he does for a living, and it turns out that the man's had a stroke and he's been forced into retirement. Ali then tries to hand him a big pile of money for the Bibles, but the man refuses, and this is where things get interesting. Ali says, "Take the money, man. I'm trying to get into heaven." And the man replies, "So am I." Ali is not taking no for an answer. He says, "If you don't take the money, I might not get in." And the man replies, "If I do take your money, I might not get in." They arrive at his home, and the man invites him in to meet his wife of 30 years. He gives Ali the Bibles. Ali slips the money under a napkin on the kitchen table. They're about to leave, and Hannah gives the man her phone number and tells him to call him, to call her if he ever needs a ride home from church again. Sitting in the car, Ali turns to his daughter and asks, "Would you really go out of your way and pick him up and drive him all the way home?" And she says, "Yes." And with tears in his eyes, he says, That's me in you. He says, you're on the road to heaven. Therein lies Ali's greatness, in his ability to see within himself something greater, and in his ability to inspire others to see such greatness reside within themselves. There will never be another greatest like Muhammad Ali, but we together can now embody a measure of his kindness and his compassion. We can say, each of us in our hearts, there's a little bit of Ali in me. This week, we have mourned the loss and celebrated the life of a Louisville legend and a citizen of the world. And of all the words and in all the ways, the most powerful moments have always been made in the voices of young people, repeated in prayer services, and chanted in the streets. I am Ali. I am Ali. I am not the fighter that Ali was. And I may not have the courage which he never lacked. And I am definitely not as pretty. But in my heart, and in my hope, and in my prayers, I am Muhammad Ali. When we say that in our hearts, when we live that in our lives, then we together can build a legacy worthy of the greatest of all time. So say that now with me, in your heart and in this room. I am Ali.
Rabbi Joe Rapport at the public memorial in Louisville, Kentucky, remembering Muhammad Ali.
One of the amazing things that
there's still more to go from members of faith traditions. Soon, a letter from President Obama. We'll hear from the family of Muhammad Ali, and then the final eulogy from former President Clinton before this memorial service comes to a close. There are thousands of people packed into this basketball arena. The dais is set with white flowers, an American flag, and the Olympic rings overhead. And we're joined here by Thomas Hauser, the writer, the author of Muhammad Ali, A Tribute to the Greatest. And I'm struck by how so many interpret a man who spoke so well for himself.
Well, we're getting a full picture of Ali here today. It began with Dr. Cosby, who talked about what Muhammad meant to the black community. And then gradually we're seeing the ripples from, wasn't really a stone that was thrown in the water, it was a boulder. And we're seeing how that emanated to all people of all religions. We've talked about not just his contribution to the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, what he meant to people all over the world, as well as the fact that he was one of the greatest boxers, if not the greatest boxer of all time. We have to remember that from time to time because Muhammad would want us to.
Sitting in the audience are some other pretty decent boxers.
A number of great former heavyweight champions, certainly as this program's gone on. We've seen Lennox Lewis, Mike Tyson, George Foreman, Evander Holyfield. I believe Sugar Ray Leonard is there. And that's just going on. Who have we seen on the TV screen? And of course, Ali has been mourned and celebrated in every sporting arena throughout the world this week.
Tom Hauser is with us. He wrote Muhammad Ali, A Tribute to the Greatest. I'm Aaron Katursky. You're listening to live coverage from ABC News. The Venerable Utsumi and Sister Denise are coming to the dais next, the final of the clerics that are sharing tributes in memory of Muhammad Ali. They're from the Buddhist tradition.
Oh,
Buddhist tradition represented at the memorial for Muhammad Ali. To continue with Ambassador Atala Shabazz, the eldest daughter of the late Malcolm X and Dr. Betty Shabazz, she'll offer a poetry reading. Thomas Hauser, Muhammad Ali, A Tribute to the Greatest, is his latest book, and fitting that he's here, of course. What was his relationship with Malcolm X?
Well, at the beginning, in the early 1960s, Malcolm was like a big brother to Muhammad. He was one of the people who was very instrumental in converting Muhammad to the Nation of Islam. Of course, he was Cassius Clay at the time. Then Malcolm split with Elijah. Ali sided with Elijah and really banished Malcolm from his life. And probably that hurt Malcolm more than any other single thing. He felt very badly about it. And years later, Muhammad would feel badly about it too, because he understood that eventually most of the people in the Nation of Islam, including Ali himself, abandoned the doctrines of segregation, white people are devils, and embraced all people. As Malcolm said, after his pilgrimage to Mecca, he had learned that people of all colors snore in the same language.
Was there any reconciliation?
No, because Malcolm was assassinated before that could occur. Malcolm was assassinated in February of 1965, and it wasn't until long after that Ali evolved in his own thinking.
Atala Shabazz being introduced now by Imam Zayed Shakir, who is officiating at this public memorial service for Muhammad Ali that has gone on now for about an hour and a half and quite a bit to go, as so many want to offer tributes and perspective still to come, eulogies from Billy Crystal and Brian Gumbel and former President Bill Clinton. Atala Shabazz, the eldest daughter of the late Malcolm X and Betty Shabazz, to offer a reading and to be introduced now by Imam Zayed Shakir.
One thing to keep in mind is that the world has been getting ready for this moment for a long time. It's really been unprecedented in that over a 30-year period, we've watched this man grow older and more debilitated and suffered with him as he suffered.
As this is a homegoing celebration, I find myself balanced between that of celebration and depletion, loss, and somehow another, my breathing capacity has been weakened this past week. So I ask all of you gathered and afar to please muster up and transmit a bit of your air to me. In the memory of Muhammad Ali, thank you all. Shukran, merci, obrigado, mushakir, gracias, shukriya, and more, as the globe centers at this very moment amidst the holy month of Ramadan, where every 2 hours there's a time zone praying and including Muhammad Ali and his family in their thoughts. Amidst that are the prayers of all faiths, all those touched, even those that don't claim a religion, are feeling something right now in honor of the family and the memory of their father, husband. In the spirit of my parents, Malcolm X Shabazz and Dr. Betty Shabazz, in the presence of my 5 younger sisters, our children, and our grandchildren, I would like to first honor his beloved wife, my sister, Lani Ali. For the strengths that you know and that resonate beyond, sometimes you do need a little help, no matter how magnificent you are. And indeed, those that were with him, that loved him, his family members, sustained that. His 9 children, and I will name them, Maryam, Rashida, Jamila, Muhammad Jr., Khalila, Mia, Hannah, Layla, and Assad, as well as their mothers and the 3rd generation of Ali grandchildren who accompany them. To his only brother, Rahman, to his extraordinary example of a best friend, Howard Bingham, and to his sister-in-law, Marilyn Williams, for all the grief that I am depleted by and others are feeling by his transition, there is none comparable to yours, and I know that. On this day and those to come, as you redefine your waking days with a life without him here presently, very different. Photos, memories, all the things that we have on him that keep him going. He touched you differently, and that has to be honored and recognized. Never forsaken. Just know that when you are the descendant of, in the presence of, someone whose life was filled with principle, that the seed is in you, so that you have to cultivate that responsibly as well. This moment is very meaningful for me to have been amongst those chosen and blessed by Muhammad himself and affirmed by his wife, Lani, to take part by sharing a prose and a statement during this homegoing ceremony. While he and I had a treasured relationship, the genesis of this love was through the love for my father. Muhammad Ali was the last of a fraternity of amazing men bequeathed to me directly by my dad. Somewhere between me turning 18, 19, or 20, they all seemed to find me, somehow guided by an oath or a promise to my dad, long after him leaving this earth, to search for me. And they did. Each one remaining in my life until joining the rest of the heavens, beloved summit of fearless humanitarians. This included Muhammad Ali, whom my dad loved as a little brother, 16 years his junior, and his entrusted friend. There was a double take when I came upon him, a once childhood, first child, and now looking right into his face. And you know how he is. You know, he gives you that little dare, like, is that you? From the very moment we found one another, it was as if no time had passed at all, despite all of the presumptions of division, despite all the efforts at separation, despite all of the organized distancing. We dove right into all of the unrequited, yet stated and duly acknowledged spaces we could explore and uncover privately. We cried out loud. His belt, his grief for having not spoken to my dad before he left. And then just as loudly, we'd laugh about the best of stories as some that can't be repeated. He was really funny. What was significant as brothers for my father and Ali was their ability to discuss openly anything, all facets of life, namely the true meaning as men with great responsibilities bestowed to them of how to make an equitable difference in the lives of others. A unifying topic was faith, an ecumenical faith, respect for faith, all faiths, even if belonging to one specific religion or none, the root of such being the gift of faith itself. So in his own words, he wrote, "We all have the same God. We just serve him differently. Rivers, lakes, ponds, streams, oceans, all have different names, but they all contain water. So do religions have different names, and yet they all contain truth. Truth expressed in different ways and forms and times. It doesn't matter whether you're a Muslim, a Christian, or a Jew. When you believe in God, you should believe all people are part of one family." "For if you love God, you can't love only some of his children. His words, and certainly ideals shared by both men. Love is a mighty thing. Devotion is a mighty thing. And truth always reigns. Having Muhammad Ali in my life somehow sustained my dad's breath for me. Just a little while longer. 51 years longer. Until now. I am forever grateful that our union on this earth together allowed for me a continuum of shared understanding, preserved confidentialities, and the comfort of living in his hometown of Louisville, Kentucky for the past 6 years. That was not a plan. And mostly for the gift of knowing and loving his wife and children forever forward, as my own family know that. As the last of the fraternity reaches the heavens, my heart is rendered ever longingly for that tribe. Tribe of purpose, tribe of significance, tribe of confidence, tribe of character, tribe of duty, tribe of faith, tribe of service. We must make sure that the principle of men and women, like Muhammad Ali and others, whom dedicated their very being to assure that you get to recognize your own glory, is sustained and passed on like that Olympic torch. My dad would often state when concluding or parting from another, "May we meet again in the light of understanding. And I say to you, with the light of that compass, by any means necessary."
Ambassador Atala Shabazz, the eldest daughter of Malcolm X and Betty Shabazz, reading words, very personal words, at the memorial for Muhammad Ali. You're listening to live coverage from ABC News. This is going on at the basketball arena in downtown Louisville. We're joined by Tom Hauser, who wrote Muhammad Ali, a tribute to the greatest.
I just want to note that the things people
Ladies
are saying this afternoon about Ali loving all
States
people
Obama,
are true. And
Jarrett.
Evidence of that is in the fact that two of Muhammad's daughters married Jews. Several years ago, Muhammad was a proud attendee at the bar mitzvah of one of his grandchildren, and his children learned that from him.
And Mrs. Obama, I wish to express to you their deepest regret that they couldn't be with us here today as we celebrate the extraordinary life of Muhammad Ali.
This is Valerie Jarrett, the White House advisor on behalf of the president.
I first met Muhammad Ali over 45 years ago through his friendship with my uncle, Gene Dibble. And he, my uncle, would be so touched that his son, Gene, is a pallbearer here today. Thank you, Lonnie. Because of my family connection, the President and First Lady asked me if I would read this tribute to you, penned by President Obama. It was 1980. An epic career was in its twilight. Everybody knew it, probably including the champ himself. Ali went into one of his final fights, an underdog. All of the smart money was on the new champ, Larry Holmes. And in the end, the odds makers were right. A few hours later, at 4 a.m., after the loss, after the fans had gone home and the sports writers were writing their final take, a sports writer asked a restroom attendant if he'd bet on the fight. The man, black and getting on in years, said he'd put his money on Ali. The writer asked why. Why, the man said? Why? Because he's Muhammad Ali. That's why. He said, Mister, I'm 72 years old, and I owe the man for giving me my dignity. Talani and the Ali family, President Clinton, and an arena full of distinguished guests, you are amazing. The man we celebrate today is not just a boxer or a poet or an agitator or a man of peace. He was not just a Muslim or a black man or a Louisville kid, though I know you wish that was it, Louisville, this wonderful city. He wasn't even just the greatest of all time. He was Muhammad Ali, the whole, far greater than the sum of its parts. He was bigger, brighter, and more original and influential than just about anyone of his era. You couldn't have made him up. And yes, he was pretty too. He had fans in every city, every village, every ghetto on the planet. He was feted by foreign heads of states. The Beatles' British invasion took a detour to come to him. It seemed sometimes that the champ was simply too big for America. But I actually think that the world flocked to him in wonder precisely because, as he once put it, Muhammad Ali was America. Brash, defiant, pioneering, joyful, never tired, always game to test the odds. He was our most basic freedoms, religion, speech, spirit. He embodied our ability to invent ourselves. His life spoke to our original sin of slavery and discrimination, and the journey he traveled helped to shock our consciousness and lead us on a roundabout path towards salvation. And like America, he was always very much a work in progress. We do him a disservice to gauze up his story, to sand down his rough edges, to talk only of floating like butterflies and stinging like bees. Ali was a radical, even in a radical of times, a loud and proud and unabashedly black voice in a Jim Crow world. His jabs knocked some sense into us. Yes, they did, pushing us to expand our imagination and bring others into our understanding. Now, there were times when he swung a bit wildly, that's right, wound up and accidentally may have wronged the wrong opponent, as he was the first to admit. But through all his triumphs and failures, Ali seemed to achieve the sort of enlightenment and inner peace that we are all striving towards. In the 60s, when other young men his age were leaving the country to avoid war or jail, he was asked why he didn't join them. He got angry. He said he'd never leave. His people, in his words, are here, the millions struggling for freedom and justice and equality, and I can do a lot of help in jail or not, right here in America. He'd have everything stripped from him, his titles, his standing, his money, his passion, very nearly his freedom. But Ali still chose America. I imagine he knew that only here in this country could he win it all back. So he chose to help perfect a union where a descendant of slaves can become the king of the world. And in the process, lend some dignity to all of us. Maids, porters, students, an elderly bathroom attendant, and help inspire a young, mixed kid with a funny name to have the audacity to believe he could be anything, even the President of the United States. Muhammad Ali was America. Muhammad Ali will always be America. What a man. What a spirit. What a joyous, mightiful champion. God bless the greatness of Ali. God bless his family. And God bless this nation we love. Thank you very much.
This is live coverage from ABC News. The memorial service for Muhammad Ali in Louisville, Kentucky. President Obama was not able to attend because it's graduation day for his daughter Malia, but his close family friend and advisor Valerie Jarrett just finished reading a letter that the president wrote.
Lonnie Ali.
And now his wife, Muhammad Ali's wife, Lonnie Ali, walks to the dais, piece of paper in hand, as 15,000 people come to their feet in tribute. She was his protector and caregiver, to deliver words on behalf of the family at this public memorial.
As-salamu alaykum. Peace be upon you. You know, I said something to Matt Lauer yesterday that I firmly believed Muhammad had something to do with all of this. And I think we are right. Thank you all for being here to share in this final farewell to Muhammad. On behalf of the Ali family, let me first recognize our principal celebrant, Imam Zayed Shakir, and also Dr. Timothy Giannotti. We thank you for your dedication to helping us fulfill Muhammad's desire that the ceremonies of this past week reflect the traditions of his Islamic faith. And as a family, we thank the millions of people who, through the miracle of social media, inspired by their love for Muhammad, have reached out to us with their prayers. The messages have come in every language from every corner of the globe. From wherever you are watching, know that we have been humbled by your heartfelt expressions of love. It is only fitting that we gather in a city to which Muhammad always returned after his great triumphs, a city that has grown as Muhammad has grown. Muhammad never stopped loving Louisville, and we know that Louisville loves Muhammad. We cannot forget a Louisville police officer, Joe Espy Martin, who embraced
a young 12-year-old boy in distress when his bicycle was stolen. Joe Martin handed young Cassius Clay, sorry for tripping over that last word, Clay, the keys to a future in boxing he could scarcely have imagined. America must never forget that when a cop and an inner city kid talk to each other, then miracles can happen. Some years ago, during his long struggle with Parkinson's in a meeting that included his closest advisors, Muhammad indicated that when the end came for him, he wanted us to use his life and his death as a teaching moment for young people, for his country, and for the world. In effect, he wanted us to remind people who were suffering that he had seen the face of injustice, that he grew up in a segregation, and that during his early life, he was not free to be who he wanted to be. But he never became embittered enough to quit or to engage in violence. There was a time when a young black boy his age could be hung from a tree. Emmett Till in Money, Mississippi in 1955, whose admitted killers went free. It was a time when Muhammad's friends, men that he admired, like Brother Malcolm, Dr. King, were gunned down, and Nelson Mandela imprisoned for what they believed in. For his part, Muhammad faced federal prosecution. He was stripped of his title and his license to box, and he was sentenced to prison. But he would not be intimidated so as to abandon his principles and his values. Muhammad wants young people of every background to see his life as proof that adversity can make you stronger. It cannot rob you of the power to dream and to reach your dreams. This is why we built the Muhammad Ali Center, and that is the essence of the Ali Center message. Muhammad wants us to see the face of his religion, Al-Islam, true Islam, as the face of love. It was his religion that caused him to turn away from war and violence. For his religion, he was prepared to sacrifice all that he had and all that he was to protect his soul and follow the teachings of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. So even in death, Muhammad has something to say. He is saying that his faith required that he take the more difficult road. It is far more difficult to sacrifice oneself in the name of peace than to take up arms in pursuit of violence. You know, all of his life, Muhammad was fascinated by travel. He was childlike in his encounter with new surroundings and new people. He took his world championship fights to the ends of the earth, from the South Pacific to Europe to the Belgian Congo. And of course, with Muhammad, he believed it was his duty to let everyone see him in person because, after all, he was the greatest of all time. The boy from Grand Avenue in Louisville, Kentucky, grew in wisdom from his journeys. He discovered something new, that the world really wasn't black and white at all. It was filled with many shades of rich colors, languages, and religions. And as he moved with ease around the world, the rich and powerful were drawn to him, but he was drawn to the poor and the forgotten. Muhammad fell in love with the masses, and they fell in love with him. In the diversity of men and their faiths, Muhammad saw the presence of God. He was captivated by the work of the Dalai Lama, by Mother Teresa and church workers who gave their lives to protect the poor. When his mother died, he arranged for multiple faiths to be represented at her funeral, and he wanted the same for himself. We are especially grateful for the presence of the diverse faith leaders here today, and I would like to ask them to stand once more and be recognized. Thank you. You know, as I reflect on the life of my husband, it's easy to see his most obvious talents. His majesty in the ring as he danced under those lights enshrined him as a champion for the ages. Less obvious was his extraordinary sense of timing. His knack for being in the right place at the right time seemed to be ordained by a higher power. Even though surrounded by Jim Crow, he was born into a family with two parents that nurtured and encouraged him. He was placed on the path of his dreams by a white cop, and he had teachers who understood his dreams and wanted him to succeed. The Olympic gold medal came, and the world started to take notice. A group of successful businessmen in Louisville, called the Louisville Sponsoring Group, saw his potential and helped him build a runway to launch his career. His timing was impeccable as he burst into the national stage, just as television was hungry for a star to change the face of sports. You know, if Muhammad didn't like the rules, he rewrote them. His religion, his name, his beliefs were his to fashion, no matter what the cost. The timing of his actions coincided with a broader shift in cultural attitudes across America, particularly on college campuses. When he challenged the U.S. government on the draft, his chance of success was slim to none. Yet the timing of his decision converged with a rising tide of discontent on the war. Public opinion shifted in his direction, followed by a unanimous Supreme Court ruling. In a stunning reversal of fortunes, he was free to return to the ring. When he traveled to Central Africa to reclaim his title from George Foreman, none of the sports writers thought he could win. In fact, most of them feared for his life. But in what the Africans call the miracle at 4 a.m., he became a champion once more. And as the years passed, and though slowed by Parkinson's, Muhammad was compelled by his faith to use his name and his notoriety to support the victims of poverty and strife. He served as a UN messenger of peace and traveled to places like war-torn Afghanistan. He campaigned as an advocate for reducing the yoke of third world debt. He stunned the world when he secured the release of 15 hostages from Iraq. As his voice grew softer, his message took on greater meaning. He came full circle with the people of his country when he lit a torch that seemed to create new light in the 1996 Olympics. Muhammad always knew instinctively the road he needed to travel. His friends know what I mean when I say he lived in the moment. He neither dwelled in the past nor harbored anxiety about the future. Muhammad loved to laugh, and he loved to play practical jokes on just about everybody. He was sure-footed in his self-awareness, secure in his faith, and he did not fear death. Yet his timing is once again poignant. His passing and his meaning for our time should not be overlooked. As we face uncertainty in a world and divisions at home, as to who we are as a people, Muhammad's life provides useful guidance. Muhammad was not one to give up on the power of understanding the boundless possibilities of love and the strength of our diversity. He counted among his friends people of all political persuasions, saw truth in all faiths and the nobility of all races, as witnessed here today. Muhammad may have challenged his government, but he never ran from it or from America. He loved this country, and he understood the hard choices that are born of freedom. I think he saw a nation's soul measured by the soul of its people. For his part, he saw the good soul in everyone. And if you were one of the lucky ones to have met him, you know what I meant. He awoke every morning thinking about his own salvation, and he would often say, "I just want to get to heaven, and I've got to do a lot of good deeds to get there." And I think Muhammad's hope is that his life provides some guidance on how we might achieve for all people what we aspire for ourselves and our families. Thank you.
Muhammad Ali's widow, Lonnie, at the public memorial in Louisville, Kentucky, as we remember and pay tribute to the greatest. The crowd of 15,000 people returns to its feet as Lonnie Ali leaves the dais. She's dressed in black, a string of pearls around her neck, a dark hat on her head obscuring her face as she spoke her words.
Ladies and gentlemen, Maryam Ali.
And now Muhammad Ali's children, some of them, to deliver their own words about their dad.
Peace be with you, everyone here. And on behalf of the Ali family, I just want to say thank you to Louisville, Kentucky. All the love you've shown us in our lives has been unbelievable. Also, I want to thank the entire globe. My father was loved all over. The processional today was overwhelming, but it was so beautiful. I just want to say we love you just like you love us. Thank you very much. As you know, my father loved poetry. He was always rhyming and promoting his fights, and he had poems of the heart, spiritual poems, and, you know, poems to promote. And I just wrote a piece for him in honor of him on behalf of my sisters and brothers and everyone who loves my father. It's called Thank You, Our Dear Father. My heart was sore when your sick spirit soared. Your physical body is no more. But my mind tells different tales of all that you taught me, your family, and the masses. Most importantly, the belief in God who created humanity to thrive in equality. You fought for a purpose to uphold the principle that we as a people have divine human rights. Staring right into the eyes of oppression, you proclaim your beautiful complexion, your God-given skills, your independent will, and the freedom of your faith. As your daughter, I am grateful for all of our conversations about men, women, and relationships, guiding me to first have a loving relationship with self, refusing anyone to chip away at my esteem and expect the respect of a queen. Thank you, our dear father, for asking us to think about our purpose and showing us the beauty of service to others. We marveled at your sincere love for people as you treated all who approached you with dignity. Whether they were rich or poor, your kindness was unconditional, never perceiving anyone as beneath you. So many have shared personal stories about what you have meant to them, as you have exemplified values and qualities that have enhanced their lives. If I had every dollar for every story, I could paper the sky. Your family is so proud of the legacy you left behind, but I hope that the history of you can help turn the tide of self-hate and violence, because we are overwhelmed with moments of silence for tragic deaths here on this soil, American soil, in the Middle East or anywhere else in this world, we crave for peace. The peace that you rest in now. We will forever cherish the 74 years you graced this earth. You will be greatly missed. But now, we send you off in celebration, a blown kiss and prayers. As you enter your final round, God's last boxing bell will sound in heaven. I love you. We all love you. Thank you very much.
Miriam Ali paying tribute to her dad at his public memorial following his private burial earlier today in a procession through Louisville, Kentucky that was 19 miles with people, 100,000 people, the police said, coming out to pay tribute. Muhammad Ali, A Tribute to the Greatest, is the book by Thomas Hauser, who's with us now as this memorial service continues. Your impressions of some of these very personal tributes.
It's quite remarkable, and the next speaker is one of Muhammad's daughters, Rashida, who probably has been the most active of his children in terms of raising awareness of Parkinson's syndrome.
I'm sure that'll be
very heartfelt.
That you have packed,
as has everything else we've heard today.
With your love.
Rashida,
thank
now.
You all. Thank you so much for being here today to celebrate our father. You are the greatest father to us, and it was God's will to take you home. Your family will try our best to make you proud and carry on your legacy of giving and love. You have inspired us and the world to be the best version of ourselves. May you live in paradise, free from suffering. You shook up the world in life. Now you're shaking up the world in death. Daddy's looking at us now, right, and saying, I told you I was the greatest. No one compares to you, Daddy. You once said, I know where I'm going, and I know the truth. And I don't have to be what you want me to be. I'm free to be who I am. Now you are free to be with your Creator. We love you so much, Daddy. Until we meet again, fly, butterfly, fly.
Muhammad Ali's daughter, Rashida Ali, at his public memorial. These are the eulogists, culminating with former President Clinton in a bit. Some of Muhammad Ali's colleagues and friends and advisors to speak next, and Tom Hauser's with us every step of the way.
Well, you know, one of the things that's been going through my mind sitting here is that there was an extraordinary three-month period that began on November 22nd, 1963, when John F. Kennedy was assassinated.
Hello.
Then, in early February, the Beatles came over to the United States and appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show. And finally, in late February 1964, Cassius Marcellus Clay beat Sonny Liston to claim the heavyweight championship of the world. No matter what the calendar says, for a lot of people who lived through that time, that's when the 60s really began. And for a lot of people, this is the end of the 60s.
A generational moment, the passing of Muhammad Ali last Friday at the age of 74 after a long bout with Parkinson's. And now a public memorial that was free of charge for 15,000 people that have packed into the basketball arena in downtown Louisville. A dark stage is adorned in white flowers, and we have heard tributes from faith leaders, from family, and now from a couple of children who were touched by the life of Muhammad Ali. To continue with friends, and then Billy Crystal and Bryant Gumbel and President Clinton. All of this has been presided over by Imam Zayed Shaker.
Ladies and gentlemen, Natasha Boncour.
Natasha Boncour stepping to the dais now as the tributes continue.
Before I begin, I would just like to say that I am truly humbled and honored to be here. And I would like to thank the Muhammad Ali Center and the Ali family for giving me the opportunity to speak and to echo the voice that Muhammad has given me. So let me tell you a story about a man. A man who refused to believe that reality was a limitation to achieve the impossible. A man who once reached up through the pages of a textbook and touched the heart of an 8-year-old girl whose reflection of herself mirrored those who could not see past the color of her skin. But instead of drawing on that pain from the distorted reality, she found strength, just as this man did when he stood tall in the face of pelting rain and shouted, "I am the disturbance in the sea of your complacency, and I will never stop shaking your waves." And his voice echoed through hers, through mine. And she picked up the rocks that were thrown at her, and she threw them back with a voice so powerful that it turned all the pain that she had faced in her life into strength and tenacity. And now, that 8-year-old girl stands before you to tell you that Ali's cry still shakes these waves today. That we are to find strength in our identities, whether we are black or white or Asian or Hispanic, LGBT, disabled or able-bodied, Muslim, Jewish, Hindu, or Christian. His cry represents those who have not been heard and invalidates the idea that we are to be conformed to one normative standard. That is what it means to defeat the impossible. Because impossible is not a fact. Impossible is an opinion. Impossible is nothing. When I look into this crowd, I smile. I smile to recognize that he is not really gone. He lives in you, and he lives in me, and he lives in every person that he has touched in every corner of this world. Reality was never a limitation for Ali. For us, just as every punch his opponents threw, impossible is never enough to knock us down, because we are Ali. We are greater than the rocks or the punches that we throw at each other. We have the ability to empower and inspire and to connect and to unify, and that will live on forever. So let me tell you a story about a man. His name is Muhammad Ali. He is the greatest of all time. He is from Louisville, Kentucky, and he lives in each and every one of us. And his story is far from over. Thank you.
A scholar at the Ali Center, Natasha Moncour, with an impassioned tribute to Muhammad Ali at his memorial service in Louisville, Kentucky. You're listening to live coverage from ABC News. I'm Aaron Katursky. Thomas Hauser, the writer, the author of Muhammad Ali, A Tribute to the Greatest, is here with us. That was something.
That was something. One of the things that Valerie Jarrett said on behalf of Barack Obama was he talked about the rough edges being sanded away from Ali's legacy. And I hope this launches a teaching, not a teaching moment, but just teaching, an education for all people about what Muhammad represented, the journey he traveled through life, because there's a lot to be learned from that, not in sound bites, not in 140 character tweets, but in the study of a long, full, very important life.
The tributes to Muhammad Ali will continue with former President Clinton and Billy Crystal, but a childhood friend, John Ramsey, and someone from Louisville is on stage now.
You'd be surprised. I think Muhammad would say, Louisville, Kentucky, the greatest city of all times. I'm feeling good. Man, I'll tell you what, how can we lose with the stuff we use? I'm feeling so good, I think I'm going to make a comeback and change my name back to Walnut Street. That's how good I feel. You know, for me, I always felt connected to Muhammad even before I'd met him. You know, maybe it was the fact that I was a Louisville boy. Maybe it's the fact that I love the Louisville Cardinals, like Muhammad. You know, but as our relationship evolved, I found that a lot of people felt this personal connection with Muhammad. And that's part of the Ali magic. You know, initially, for a lot of men my age, and certainly myself, it was the athlete that I was attracted to. I mean, that kind of size, that kind of speed, that agility, that grace, not only made him the heavyweight champion of the world three times, but it made him Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Century, the AP Athlete of the Century. Certainly it made him the athlete, a once-in-a-lifetime athlete. But I would argue that the combination of compassion, kindness, love, and the ability to lift us up made him a once-in-a-lifetime person. You know, Muhammad was blessed with many gifts, as I said, and he was a wise and faithful steward of those gifts. There's many stories about Muhammad, but there's a couple that really, to me, encapsulate what he was all about. I remember back in 2000, I made a trip to the Summer Olympics with Muhammad, and one day he decided we were going to go see a boxing match. And I remember we're ringside, the American wins, 15,000 people are chanting, USA, USA. And I thought, this is my Olympic moment. You know, I was filled with patriotic pride. The boxer came down from the ring. He took the obligatory picture with Muhammad, the fist-to-chin shot. Hundreds of photographers from around the world were taking pictures. You know, thousands of people cheering for Muhammad and this victorious fighter. And then Muhammad leaned down to me, whispered in my ear. He said, I want to see the loser. I said, excuse me? I want to see the loser. So I motioned over to an Olympic official and I said, you know, Muhammad wants to see the loser. Can we go to the losing locker room? And we get to the losing locker room and there's not tens of thousands of people. There's not any photographers. There's just a kid in the corner on a stool. He's got a towel around his neck. He's got a bloody mouth under his eye. This has got to be the lowest point of his athletic career at the very least. Felt like he let down his country. He's defeated. And the vibe in that room was literally the lowest of low. But then when Muhammad walks in, this kid recognizes him instantly. And in broken English, he says, Muhammad Ali. And Muhammad started dancing. He says, show me what you got, man. Show me what. And Muhammad starts throwing out jabs. And this kid starts ducking and smiling. Muhammad grabs him in a bear hug. And he said, I saw what you did out there, man. You look good, man. You're moving good. You can be a champion, man. He goes, don't give up. And I remember it warmed my heart how he took this kid from here to here in an instant. And And I remember I got in the car and I said to Muhammad, I said, Muhammad, I try to be a nice guy, but I've got to tell you, I was caught up in the moment. I didn't give that losing fighter a second thought. I said, Muhammad, you're the greatest. Muhammad said, tell me something I don't already know. But what I don't want people to forget, no doubt, to me, he is the finest example of a human that I've ever seen. The finest example of a great human being that I've ever seen, of the kindness that a human possesses. That was Muhammad Ali. But don't forget about this, man. Muhammad was the coolest cat in the room. I mean, he was good looking. He had charm. He had charisma. He had swagger before he knew what swagger was. I mean, I remember went to when it was about 25 years ago, he came in town to visit his mother, and he wanted to go to Outback Steakhouse. I had a friend there who was a big Muhammad fan. So we come in, and at the time here in Louisville, there was a fireman's convention, and all of these guys had their engine numbers on their shirt, and sure enough, I'd seen this scene a million times, man. These guys line up for an autograph, and I say to Muhammad, I said, Muhammad, if you'd like, I'll play the bad guy. You know, I'll tell him to let you eat, and you can sign autographs later. Muhammad would have none of it. He's like, no, I'll sign between bites. So he's taking bites of his food, and he's signing. This one guy walks up, and you can tell he's a big fan. I mean, he knew Muhammad. He was scared to death. All this adrenaline flowing. He said, champ, he said, I saw the stance you made in the civil rights movement. I saw your stance against the Vietnam War. He said, I've got to tell you, champ, you're my hero. He said, I've got a picture of you at the firehouse. You're my hero. Muhammad, instantly, he wanted to change the channel. So he said to the guy, he said, you know, you're the real hero, jumping in fires, saving lives, saving babies, putting your life on the line. He said, man, you're the real hero. And the fireman responds real quickly. I mean, he knew all the nicknames. He said, man, but you fought the bear, Sonny Liston. He says, you fought the rabbit, Floyd Patterson. You fought Big George Foreman. You fought smoking Joe Frazier. Muhammad interrupted him real quick, and he goes, yeah, but Joe wasn't really smoking. And I said, Muhammad, that's a good line. He goes, you're right. Write that down. But it wasn't all about signing autographs and kissing babies. You know, if there was a village that needed food in a third world country, Muhammad was on plane, will travel with check. If there was a conflict and he could be part of a resolution, again, Muhammad will travel. As Lonnie had mentioned, if there were hostages to be released, Muhammad was a man of action. One of my favorite quotes, and I think it's right here in your program, Muhammad said, service to others is the rent you pay for your room here on earth. And I just want to say, champ, your rent is paid in full. Your rent is paid in full. Your rent is paid in full. You know, in fact, I think he's paid it forward because he has taught us to love rather than to hate, to look for commonalities rather than differences. And so therefore, I think he's really paid it forward for all of us. So as we all know now, you know, the fight is over, but I'm here to tell you, the decision is in and it is unanimous. Because of Muhammad Ali, we all win. The world wins. Thank you so much, Muhammad. It is time for a man of peace to rest in peace. And thank you so very much.
This is live coverage from ABC News, Remembering the Greatest. I'm Aaron Katursky. Public tributes to Muhammad Ali at his memorial service in Louisville, Kentucky. Just now from John Ramsey, a friend and a local radio and television personality. And now from Billy Crystal, whose famous 15 rounds bit from 1980 inspired Ali and a generation of his fans.
I was clean shaven when this started. Dear Lonnie, family, friends, Mr. President, members of the clergy, all these amazing people here in Louisville. Today, This outpouring of love and respect proves that 35 years after he stopped fighting, he is still the champion of the world. Last week, when we heard the news, time stopped. There was no war, there were no terrorists, no global catastrophes. The world stopped, took a deep breath, and sighed. Since then, my mind has been racing through my relationship with this amazing man, which is now 42 years that I know him. Every moment I can think of is cherished, and while others can tell you of his accomplishments, he wanted me to speak and tell you of some personal moments that we had together. I met him in 1974. I was just getting started as a stand-up comedian and struggling, but I had one good routine. It was a three-minute conversation between Howard Cosell and Muhammad Ali where I would imitate both of them. Ali had just defeated George Foreman and regained the heavyweight title. Sport magazine made him the man of the year, and Dick Schaap, a wonderful writer and a great man, was the editor for Sport. And he was going to host this televised dinner honoring Muhammad Ali. So Dick called my agent looking for a comedian who did some sports material. As fate would have it, that comedian was not available. And she wisely said, it's destiny, man. And she wisely said, but listen, I got this young kid, and he does this great imitation of Ali and Cosell. It'd be perfect for you. So I don't know why, but Dick said, okay, I'll try him. If he thinks I can cut him out of the show. I couldn't believe it. My first time on television, and it would be with Ali. I arrived at the Plaza Hotel. The event was jammed. I met Mr. Schaap, who would later become a part of my family. And he said, well, how should I introduce you? Nobody knows who you are. And I said, just say one of Ali's closest and dearest friends. And my thought was, I'll get right to the microphone, go into my Howard Cosell, and I'll be fine. And then I nervously move into the jammed ballroom, and that's when I saw him for the first time in person. It's very hard to describe how much he meant to me. You had to live in his time. It's great to look at clips, and it's amazing that we have them, but to live in his time, watching his fights, experiencing the genius of his talent was absolutely extraordinary. Every one of his fights was an aura of a Super Bowl. He did things nobody would do. He predicted the round that he would knock somebody out in, and then he would do it. He was funny. He was beautiful. He was the most perfect athlete you ever saw, and those were his own words. But he was so much more than a fighter as time went on, with Bobby Kennedy gone, Martin Luther King gone, Malcolm X gone. Who was there to relate to when Vietnam exploded in our face? There were millions of young men my age, eligible for the draft for a war that we didn't believe in, all of us huddled on the conveyor belt that was rapidly feeding the war machine. But it was Ali who stood up for us by standing up for himself. And after he was stripped of the title, and the right to fight anywhere in the world, he gave speeches at colleges and on television that totally reached me. He seemed as comfortable talking to kings and queens as the lost and unrequited. He never lost his sense of humor, even as he lost everything else. He was always himself, willing to give up everything for what he believed in. And his passionate rhetoric about the life and plight of black people in our country resonated strongly in my house. I grew up in a house that was dedicated to civil rights. My father was a producer of jazz concerts in New York City and was one of the first to integrate bands in the 40s and 50s. Jazz musicians referred to my dad as the Branch Rickey of jazz. Yeah, yeah. My uncle and my family, Jewish people, produced Strange Fruit, Billie Holiday's classic song describing the lynching of African Americans in this country. And so I felt him. And now there he was, just a few feet from me. I couldn't stop looking at him. And he seemed to, like, glow. And he was, like, in slow motion, his amazing face, smiling and laughing. I was seated a few seats from him on the dais. And in the room, all of these athletes in their individual sports, great ones. Gino Marchetti of the Baltimore Colts, Franco Harris of the Steelers, Archie Griffin, who had won the Heisman from Ohio State, literary legends, Neil Simon, George Plimpton, all on a dais, fawning over Ali, who then looked at me
with an expression that seemed to say, what is Joel Gray doing here? Mr. Schaap introduced me as one of Ali's closest and dearest friends. Two people clapped. My wife and the agent. I rose, Ali still staring at me. I passed right behind him, got to the podium, went right into the Cosell.
Hello, everyone. Howard Cosell coming to you live from Zaire. Some would pronounce it Zaire. They're wrong. It got big laughs. And then I went into the Ali.
Everybody's talking about George Foreman. I want to talk about George Foreman. George Foreman's ugly. He's so slow. George was slow. I come out, voop, voop, voop. And then I have a rope-a-dope George, and I'm still fast at 33 years of age. I'm so fast that I can turn up the lights, be in my bed before the room gets dark. Howard, I'm announcing tonight that I got new religious beliefs. From now on, I want to be known as Izzy Yiskowitz. I am now an Orthodox Jew. Izzy Yiskowitz, I am the greatest of all time.
The audience exploded. See, no one had ever done him before. And here he was, a white kid from Long Island, imitating the greatest of all time. And he was loving it. And when I was done, he gave me this big bear hug and he whispered in my ear,
you're my little brother.
Which is what he always called me until the last time that I saw him. We were always there for each other. If he needed me for something, I was there. He came to anything I asked him to do. Most memorable. He was an honorary chairman for a dinner and a very important event where I was being honored by the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. He did all of this promotion for it. He came to the dinner. He sat with my family the entire evening. He took photographs with everybody. The most famous Muslim man in the world honoring his Jewish friend. And because he was there, we raised a great deal of money. And I was able to use it to endow the university in Jerusalem with something that I told him about. And it was something that he loved the theory of. And it thrives to this day. It's called Peace Through the Performing Arts. It's a theater group where Israeli, Arab, and Palestinian actors, writers, and directors all work together in peace, creating original works of art. And that doesn't happen without him. I had so many funny, unusual moments with him. I sat next to him at Howard Cosell's funeral. A very somber day, to be sure. Closed casket was on the stage. Muhammad and I were sitting somewhere over there next to each other. And he quietly whispered to me, little brother, do you think he's wearing his hairpiece? So I said, I don't think so.
Well, then how will God recognize him?
So I said, champ, once he opens his mouth, God'll know. So we started laughing. It was a muffled laugh at first, but then we couldn't contain ourselves. Here we were at a funeral, me with Muhammad Ali laughing like two little kids who heard something dirty in church, you know, and we're just laughing and laughing. And then he looked at me and he whispered,
Howard was a good man.
One time he asked me if I would like to run with him one morning, do road work with him. I said, well, that'd be amazing. Where do you run? He said, well, I run at this country club and I run on a golf course early in the morning. It's very private. Nobody bothers me. We'll have a great time. And I said, champ, I can't run there. The club has a reputation for being restricted.
What's restricted me?
They don't allow Jews there. They don't have any Jewish members. He was incensed.
I'm a black Muslim, and they let me run there. Little brother, I'm never going to run there again.
And he didn't. My favorite memory, perhaps, was 1979. He had just retired, and there was a retirement party at the Forum in Los Angeles for Muhammad and 20,000 of his closest friends in Los Angeles. I performed a piece that I had created. The imitation had grown into a life story. It's called 15 Rounds. And I play him from the age of 18 until he's 36, ready for the rematch with Leon Spinks. I posted it on the internet last week, footage that nobody had ever seen before, of me portraying Ali, doing his life for him, all those years ago in 1979. There were 20,000 people there, but I was doing it only for him. It's one of my favorite performances that I've ever done in my life. I sort of got lost in him. I didn't even know where I was at the end of the performance. And suddenly I'm backstage with another heavyweight champion, Richard Pryor. And Pryor is holding on to me, crying. And then I see Ali coming. And he's got a full head of steam. He's looking only at me. And he nudged Mr. Pryor aside. And he whispered in my ear with a big bear hug, "Little brother, you made my life better than it was." But didn't he make all of our lives a little bit better than they were? That, my friends, is my history with a man. And I've labored to come up with a way to describe the legend. He was a tremendous bolt of lightning, created by Mother Nature out of thin air, a fantastic combination of power and beauty. We've seen still photographs of lightning bolts at the moment of impact, ferocious in its strength, magnificent in its elegance. And at the moment of impact, it lights up everything around it, so you can see everything clearly. Muhammad Ali struck us in the middle of America's darkest night, in the heart of its most threatening gathering storm. His power toppled the mightiest of foes, and his intense light shined on America. And we were able to see clearly injustice, inequality, poverty, pride, self-realization, courage, laughter, love, joy, and religious freedom for all. Ali forced us to take a look at ourselves. This brash young man who thrilled us, angered us, confused, and challenged us, ultimately became a silent messenger of peace, who taught us that life is best when you build bridges between people, not walls. My friends, only once in 1,000 years or so do we get to hear a Mozart or see a Picasso, read a Shakespeare. Ali was one of them. And yet, at his heart, he was still a kid from Louisville who ran with the gods and walked with the crippled and smiled at the foolishness of it all. He is gone, but he will never die. He was my big brother. Thank you.
Live from Louisville, Billy Crystal at the public memorial service for Muhammad Ali, who died a week ago at age 74. You're listening to live coverage from ABC News. I'm Aaron Katursky. We're joined by Thomas Hauser, the writer, the author of Muhammad Ali, A Tribute to the Greatest. Stunning.
It's stunning. And I guess we're going to hear Brian Gumbel now, and after that, Bill Clinton, and then maybe we can go through some recollections that this has stirred.
Here's Brian Gumbel.
The great Maya Angelou, who was herself no stranger to fame, wrote that ultimately people will forget what you said, and people will forget what you did, but that no one will ever forget how you made them feel. As applied to Muhammad Ali, the march of time may one day diminish his boasts and his poetry, maybe even his butterflies and bees. It may even one day dull the memories of the thriller in Manila and the rumble in the jungle. But I doubt any of us will ever forget how Muhammad Ali made us feel. And I'm not talking about how proud he made you feel with his exploits, or how special he made you feel when you were privileged enough to be in his company. I'm talking about how he gripped our hearts and our souls and our conscience and made our fights his fights for decades. People like me, who were once young, semi-gifted, and black, will never forget what he freed within us. Some of us, like him, took pride in being black, bold, and brash. And because we were so unapologetic, we were, in the eyes of many, way too uppity. We were way too arrogant. Yet we reveled in being like him. By stretching society's boundaries as he did, he gave us levels of strength and courage we didn't even know we had. But Ali's impact was not limited to those of a certain race or of a certain religion or of a certain mindset. The greatness of this man for the ages was that he was, in fact, a man for all ages. Has any man ever scripted a greater arc to his life? What does it say of a man, any man, that he can go from being viewed as one of his country's most polarizing figures to arguably his most beloved? And to do so without changing his nature or for a second compromising his principles. Yeah, you know, there were great causes, there were great national movements, there were huge divisions that afforded Ali unusual opportunities to symbolize our struggles. But Harry Truman had it right when he said men make history and not the other way around. Or as Lauryn Hill so nicely put it, consequence is no coincidence. Befitting his stature as the GOAT, Muhammad Ali never shied away from a fight. He fought not just the biggest and baddest men of his day inside the ropes, but outside the ring he also went toe-to-toe with an array of critics, a seemingly endless succession of societal norms, the architects of a vile, immoral war, the U.S. government. He even fought, ultimately to his detriment, the limitations of Father Time. Strictly speaking, fighting is what he did. But he broadened that definition by sharing his struggles with us and by viewing our struggles as his. And so it was that at various times he accepted and led battles on behalf of his race, in support of his generation, in defense of his religious beliefs, and ultimately, in spite of his disease. I happen to have been overseas working in Norway this past week. My buddy Matt called. Told me the champ had been taken to the hospital. But this time it was really serious. Right away I called Lonnie, who was, as always, a pillar of strength. And as we discussed the medical details, the doctor's views, and the ugly realities of mortality, Lonnie said, "Bryant, the world still needs him, and indeed it does. The world needs a champion who always worked to bridge the economic and social divides that threaten a nation that he dearly loved. The world needs a champion that always symbolized the best of Islam to offset the hatred born of fear. And the world needs a champion who believed in fairness and inclusion for all. Hating people because of their color is wrong, Ali said. And it doesn't matter which color does the hating. It's just plain wrong. Yeah, we do need Muhammad Ali now. We need the strength and the hope, the compassion and the conviction that he always demonstrated. But this time, our beloved champion is down. And for once, he'll not get up. Not this time. Not ever again. Let me close with a quick personal story. 50 years ago, Muhammad Ali defeated George Travallo in Toronto, Canada. The very next day, he showed up in my Hyde Park neighborhood on the south side of Chicago. As Ali got out of a car in the driveway at the home of Elijah Muhammad, I happened to be next door, shooting hoops in a friend's backyard. I, of course, quickly ran to the fence, and for the first time in my life, I shook the champ's hand. I was 17, I was awestruck, and man, I thought he was the greatest. Now, half a century and a lifetime of experiences later, I am still awestruck. And I'm convinced more than ever that Muhammad Ali is the greatest. To be standing here, by virtue of his and Lonnie's request, it's mind-numbing. The honor that Ali has done me today, as he goes to his grave, is one that I will take to mine. God bless you, Jim.
Live from Louisville and the public memorial for Muhammad Ali, it's Bryant Gumbel. You're listening to live coverage from ABC News. I'm Aaron Katursky. They're remembering the greatest in downtown Louisville. The final eulogist is former President Bill Clinton, who steps to the podium now against a backdrop of flowers and clergymen from all religious traditions who have paid tribute to Muhammad Ali and his desire for inclusion. Here's the former president.
I can just hear Muhammad saying now, well, I thought I should be eulogized by at least one president. And by making you last in a long, 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 long line, I guarantee you a standing ovation. I'm trying to think of what has been left unsaid. First, Lonnie, I thank you and the members of the family for telling me that he actually, as Brian said, picked us all to speak and given me a chance to come here. I thank you for what you did to make the second half of his life greater than the first. I thank you for the Muhammad Ali Center and what it has come to represent to so many people. Here's what I'd like to say. I spend a lot of time now, as I get older and older and older, trying to figure out what makes people tick, how do they turn out the way they are, how do some people refuse to become victims and rise from every defeat? We've all seen the beautiful pictures of the home Muhammad Ali was a boy in, and people visiting and driving by. I think he decided something I hope every young person here will decide. I think he decided very young to write his own life story. I think he decided before he could possibly have worked it all out, and before fate and time could work their will on him, he decided that he would not be ever disempowered. He decided that not his race, nor his place, nor the expectations of others, positive, negative, or otherwise, would strip from him the power to write his own story. He decided first to use these stunning gifts, his strength and speed in the ring, his wit and way with words and managing the public, and his mind and heart, to figure out at a fairly young age who he was, what he believed, and how to live with the consequences of acting on what he believed. A lot of people make it to steps one and two and still just can't quite manage living with the consequences of what he believed. For the longest time, in spite of all the wonderful things that have been said here, I remember thinking when I was a kid, this guy is so smart. And he never got credit for being as smart as he was. And then, I don't think he ever got the credit for being, until later, as wise as he was. In the end, besides being a lot of fun to be around and basically a universal soldier for our common humanity, I will always think of Muhammad as a truly free man of faith. And being a man of faith, he realized he would never be in full control of his life. Something like Parkinson's could come along. But being free, he realized that life still was open to choices. It is the choices that Muhammad Ali made that have brought us all here today in honor and love. And the only other thing I'd like to say, I think we all need to really, really think about, is that the first part of his life was dominated by the triumph of his truly unique gifts. We should never forget them. We should never stop looking at the movies. We should thank Will Smith for making his movie. We should all be thrilled. It was a thing of beauty. But the second part of his life was more important, because he refused to be imprisoned by a disease that kept him hamstrung longer than Nelson Mandela was kept in prison in South Africa. That is, in the second half of his life, he perfected gifts that we all have. Every single solitary one of us have gifts of mind and heart. It's just that he found a way to release them in ways large and small. I'll never forget, I asked Lonnie if she remembered the time when they were still living in Michigan, and I gave a speech in Southwest Michigan. There's an economic club there, and it's sort of a ritual when a president leaves office. And you know, you have to get reacclimated. Nobody plays a song when you walk in a room anymore. You don't really know what you're supposed to do. And this club here, there, it's called the Economic Club, I think. They're used to acting like you still deserve to be listened to, and you got to get reacclimated. So they came to dinner, and they sat with me at this dinner. And he knew, somehow he knew, that I was a little off my feed that night. I was trying to imagine how to make this new life. And so he told me a really bad joke. And he told it so well, and he laughed so hard, that I totally got over it and had a great time. He had that feel about, you know, there's no textbook for that, knowing where somebody else is in their head. Picking up the body language. Then Lonnie and Muhammad got me to come here when we had the dedication to the Muhammad Ali Center. And I was trying to be incredibly old, gray-haired, elder statesman, dignified. I got to elevate this guy. So I'm saying all this stuff in very high-toned language. And Muhammad sneaks up behind me and puts his fingers up. Finally, after all the years that we had been friends, my enduring image of him is like a little reel in three shots. The boxer I thrilled to as a boy. The man I watched take the last steps to light the Olympic flame when I was president. And I'll never forget it. I was sitting there in Atlanta. By then we knew each other. By then I felt it. I had some sense of what he was living with. And I was still weeping like a baby, seeing his hand shake and his leg shake, and knowing by God he was going to make those last few steps. No matter what it took, the flame would be lit, the fight would be won. The spirit would be affirmed. I knew it would happen. And then this. The children whose lives he touched, the young people he inspired. It's the most important thing of all. So I ask you to remember that. We all have an Ali story. It's the gifts we all have that should be most honored today. Because he released them to the world. Never wasting a day that the rest of us could see anyway. Feeling sorry for himself that he had Parkinson's. Knowing that more than three decades of his life would be circumscribed in ways that would be chilling to the naked eye. But with a free spirit, it made his life bigger, not smaller. Because other people, all of us, unlettered, unschooled, in the unleashing said, well, would you look at that? Look at that. May not be able to run across a ring anymore. May not be able to dodge everybody and exhaust everybody anymore. And he's bigger than ever because he is a free man of faith, sharing the gifts we all have. We should honor him by letting our gifts go among the world as he did. God bless you, my friend. Go in peace.
Live from Louisville. Former President Bill Clinton paying tribute to Muhammad Ali at this public memorial that now draws to a close. Mr. Clinton was the final eulogist. He lauded Muhammad Ali as a man of faith and a man of great internal gifts. And he encouraged us to summon our own gifts of mind and heart to emulate Ali's example. I'm Aaron Katursky. You're listening to live coverage from ABC News. This tribute to Muhammad Ali winds to a close now with closing prayers from the imam who has been presiding, and we are joined by Thomas Hauser, the writer, the author of Muhammad Ali, A Tribute to the Greatest. President Clinton said we all have a Muhammad Ali story, and I know this has stirred some in you.
Two quick stories. First, I was in Seattle with Muhammad for one of these celebratory dinners. It was at the Kingdom in conjunction with a fight card, and there was a young fighter there. He was a club fighter, lightweight, with a record of something like 6 wins and 3 losses. He went over to Muhammad at one point, and of course he was in awe of Ali, and said to him, "Mr. Ali, I just want you to know, when I'm walking to the ring for a fight, when I'm scared, I say to myself, I'm Muhammad Ali. I'm the greatest fighter in the world, and no one can beat me." Muhammad looked at him and said, "When I was going to the ring for a fight, and I was scared, I said the same thing." Second story, and this goes back to before I knew Muhammad, in his glory days. He was the heavyweight champion of the world. He'd beaten George Foreman. He was on a shuttle flight from Washington, D.C. to New York. As the plane was readying for takeoff, the flight attendant came over to him and said, "Mr. Ali, please buckle your seatbelt." Ali looked at her and said, "Superman don't need no seatbelt." The flight attendant looked at him and said very sweetly, "Mr. Ali, Superman don't need no plane." And he loved it. Every time I told that story at a gathering, he roared. And that was part of the beauty of Muhammad Ali. He was able to laugh at himself.
Muhammad Ali, remembering the greatest. The public tribute now comes to a close in Louisville before 15,000 people inside the arena and 100,000 who line the streets of his hometown to pay a final farewell. Only once in 1,000 years do we get to hear a Mozart, Billy Crystal said. See a Picasso, read a Shakespeare. Muhammad Ali, Crystal said, was one of those. I'm Aaron Katursky. You've been listening to live coverage, Muhammad Ali, Remembering the Greatest, from ABC News.